You're listening to The Andy Fin Show, centrally located in America, on the TAFS Radio Network.
We are back on The Andy Fin Show, and today is August 11th, 2008. And it was on this day in 1965 that in the United States here we had riots in Watts, the Watts section of Los Angeles. There were other race riots that year, that summer, but 34 people were killed, 1,000 injured, and 3,000 were arrested. So some pretty serious stuff. Also, it was on this day in 1950. Oh, I'm not going to say, I've already given away the decade. In 1956, that Jackson Pollock died. Jackson Pollock, of course, was an abstract artist. He did big paintings of splotchy splashes of paint on a canvas is what a lot of them look like. And he died in an auto accident in the Hamptons on the eastern end of Long Island. And then finally, it was on this day that President Ronald Reagan gave one of the biggest gaffes in presidential history. He was preparing for his weekly radio broadcast. In fact, Reagan is the one that started these weekly radio broadcasts. I don't think Carter did weekly. No, Reagan started them, I think. And he was testing the microphone, and it wasn't supposed to get recorded or go out over the air. I guess it got recorded. I don't think it went out over the air. And he was joking about the Soviet Union, and he said, "My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you that I've just signed legislation that would outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes." And then a little chuckle. You know, that was 1984 on this date, and I have to say, didn't reassure me when he did that. I knew he wasn't serious, but first of all, he didn't seem to know the difference between Russia and the Soviet Union, but hey, I guess a lot of people used to make that mistake. In any case, we're going to move on from that to the John Edwards situation. So the other big news of the weekend was that on Friday, John Edwards admitted that he had had an affair. The National Enquirer has been reporting on this for months, and the biggest piece of news came that hit the first time I saw it in the mass media was about a month ago, and it got reported, it picked up from somebody, picked it up, maybe it was on the internet, but I saw it I didn't read it in the National Enquirer, I'll tell you, and it said that they had followed, they'd gotten a tip, they followed John Edwards to a hotel room, watched him go into the room of the woman he was having the affair with. It was registered in her name. That part had already been documented about the affair, apparently. He spent 5 hours in there, and then they saw him come out. He took an elevator down to the basement, and the National Enquirer reporters and photographers were there waiting for him. He ran and hid in a bathroom and was in there 20 minutes or so. And when he came out, the local security, hotel security, escorted him out, and he didn't answer reporters' questions. So He'd been denying these tabloid rumors and calling them tabloid filth or gutter journalism, whatever they called it, and he finally had to admit it. Now, the interesting twists here are that he told Elizabeth about the affair back in 2006, before he mounted his campaign for president and before she had her reoccurrence, I think it's a reoccurrence, not a first occurrence, with breast cancer, inoperable breast cancer she has. And he confessed it to her, and they still decided to go ahead with the campaign. Then, well, let me just say, I don't know quite what it means when he says he spent five, when they say he spent 5 hours in this woman's hotel room. Apparently, they tried to set up a meeting to continue to keep the cover-up on, and now it'll come out whether he paid her hush money. He paid her $100,000 to do films, video clips for YouTube and their website, I guess, but basically to do short videos of the campaign. And this woman had no particular experience with video. She didn't own a video company or anything before she got this business. So that's interesting in and of itself. But regardless, it seems to me the biggest thing about the Edwards situation is that this was so reckless of him. The idea that you could think that you could have this affair, and just because you tell your wife it's okay to go ahead running for president, imagine if he'd gotten the nomination. Of course, one of the reasons he didn't is that he isn't a man of complete integrity, obviously, because he cheated on his wife. But had he got the nomination, this would blow up in the Democrat Party's face 3 weeks before the nominating convention. And that's just so irresponsible and selfish of a leader to do. So I just think it's weird that he somehow thought he could get away with this. And he said in his speech, you know, I was guilty of hubris and all this stuff. Yeah. And there's just no excuse for it. Man, I don't get it. Anyway, what's interesting is to watch the coverage of this. Now, I watched the coverage when it happened Friday night. Of course, you dump this information on a Friday in the same way that the White House or a campaign dumps bad news on a Friday because of the news cycles. If you dump it late on a Friday, they barely got time to put it on the evening news. Fewer people watch the Friday evening news than any night of the week, weeknights. And fewer people read Saturday papers than any other day of the week. So you have a chance that a small story, some bad news, will blow over by Monday, especially if there's another big news story or two that are back in the news over the next few days. Some people will just never hear about it. Something like this you're likely to hear about. But I was flipping the channel around to see how it got covered. And my first impression was that Fox News would beat this to death and the other networks would cover it, you know, more responsibly. I was pleasantly surprised to find out that Fox News didn't cover it any more than CNN. In fact, my casual impression is CNN covered it the most, then Fox, then MSNBC. They all covered it, and they all covered it in quite a bit of detail, meaning they spent quite a bit of time on it in the course of the evening, the various shows. Most every show did cover it, right through the 10 o'clock shows where Fox has Greta Van Susteren and CNN Headline News has, what's her name, Nancy Grace. And, you know, you get all that missing white women investigative reporting, supposedly, stuff. Anyway, what's interesting is who thinks the story has legs. Fox News is still covering it tonight in some depth, which is a little surprising, because I contrast that with the story of Ron Suskind. Now, the Ron Suskind book came out a month ago. And Ron Suskind's book essentially makes the claim that the Bush administration is guilty of fabricating information to cover their butts when it comes to why they went into Iraq for the war. It's called The Way of the World: A Story of Truth and Hope in the Age of Extremism. Now, Suskind is not the gutter journalist that some conservatives have tried to paint him as. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning author, or as one of my students once wrote, a Pulitzer Prize-winning author. But basically, he describes the manufacture of false evidence. Basically, there was a general who was head of Iraqi intelligence under Saddam Hussein, and he got out of Iraq and became one of our informants. The problem is that I think this was after the invasion we caught up with him, and no, it was before the invasion, because the British talked with him first, I think. And when he said Saddam doesn't have weapons of mass destruction, they've mostly been degraded, the ones he had, and he hasn't manufactured more, the British took it to George Tenet, supposedly, according to Suskind, and he quotes the people in here. This is not unsourced material. He quotes people high up in the CIA and elsewhere to corroborate the story. He put it together rather meticulously. And Suskind says, look, these people say this is how it happened. So how it supposedly happened was They went to George Tenet, the British intelligence did, and said, guess what? They don't have WMD. And George Tenet said, they're not going to like this downtown. Well, he means the Bush administration, the White House, Vice President Cheney's office. And basically what Susskind charges that's so damning is he says that, I think they'd already struck a deal with this intelligence chief. His name was General, what is it? Taher Jali Habush al-Tikriti. But I think people call him just al-Tikriti. I'm not pronouncing it right because I don't hear his name often enough. But basically, they promised him, I think, asylum and money for information, expecting them to say Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. Instead, he said the opposite. So the Bush administration, according to Susskind, got him his relocation, got him $5 million, and then said, hey, after they invaded, they said, hey, we'd like you to sign this letter. And it was backdated to 3 months before 9/11, and it said that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction. Also, it mentions the receipt of a shipment of yellow cake from Niger. It wasn't so much about the weapons of mass destruction. It was the yellow cake from Niger and that the 9/11 hijacker, Mohammed Atta, received training in Iraq. Right? Now, when this memo came out, conservatives, Cheney and other administration people jumped on it and said, see, this is the link showing that Mohammed Atta was in cahoots with Saddam, that Saddam was in cahoots with Al-Qaeda. And people like Bill O'Reilly and other talk show hosts said, oh, this is it. You know, this is the smoking gun. It shows things. Turns out, if you can believe Susskind's research, that this memo was fabricated and they got the former intelligence chief to sign it and pretend that he actually sent this information to Saddam in a letter. Now, people have seen through it pretty quickly and said it's clearly a forgery, and they did this back in 2003 when it first surfaced. For a number of reasons, it was a forgery that I won't go into in detail, except to say that it's kind of weird to be mentioned in the yellow cake and the training of Atta in the same letter. They're not really related. And there were other things wrong with the letter that made it obvious it was a forgery. Now, what's interesting is, of course, the right blogosphere was very quick to figure out that Dan Rather was working with forged letters when it came to Bush's, the piece that CBS did about Bush's National Guard service, but they're unable to put this together. In fact, there are still people claiming that Mohammed Atta was trained by Saddam, and that's the link to 9/11. Susskind says no, that the White House ordered the CIA to do this, and George Tenet. Now, that's the first version of the story, and I think Susskind may have gotten it wrong, because the first thing I thought of when I read a recount of this and I heard him interviewed was, wait a minute, the CIA is famously not a group that gets along with the White House and Dick Cheney. They don't trust each other. So when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about that, and we will look into what the other option is for where this letter may have come from.
Hi, I'm Andy Finn. You know, even if someone handed me $1 million this morning, I'd still be doing my radio show on WEBR. Why? Because I have commitment. I have dedication. Plus, I signed a contract. Now, if you'll do the same, I'll have one more dedicated listener. Don't worry, you can void your contract if I ever get obsessed with liberals, or gays, the flag, the pledge, embryonic stem cells, the UN, illegal immigrants, missing white women, or the country of France. So tune in the Andy Finn Show on WEBR, Mondays from 11 to midnight. Hey, if you had $1 million, you could buy a radio station.
How to. Okay, so we're back talking about Ron Suskind's book, The Way of the World, and its indictment, not literally, but its accusation against the Bush administration, which, by the way, the Bush administration has strenuously denied. And the thing that didn't strike me as right about it when I read about it first and heard Suskind interviewed about it was, why would the Bush administration think they could order the CIA to fabricate a memo for them, and why would the CIA do it? Well, it is true George Tenet and George Bush had a unique relationship. That is, Tenet took the fall for the 16 words, even though he warned them not to put it in there. This is in the 16 words in the 2003 State of the Union address. And Bush turned around and gave Tenet the Medal of Freedom Award, even though the CIA badly bungled the intelligence, if you buy that story, that it was the intelligence that was bungled and not the politicization and use, selective cherry-picking of the intelligence that was done by the administration. But even so, in general, the CIA has a long history of being independent, and there's been mistrust between the CIA and the White House, particularly in this administration. They thought that the White House was acting precipitously on Iraq, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I was curious as to why they would agree to fabricate this memo, because Tenet can't do it by himself. He'd need help from within the CIA. Well, now a more plausible explanation has come out, and I'm trying to remember where I read this. And at the moment, I can't. But basically, the alternate argument now is that Suskind may have got it wrong, that they didn't ask the CIA to fabricate the memo, that it was Cheney's office, and that would be Scooter Libby is the name that gets mentioned prominently, and of course David Addington possibly, which is now Cheney's chief of staff, now that Libby has been convicted of a felony. But that it was Cheney's office, the vice president's office, that went to the Pentagon, not the CIA, and they had Doug Feith's office fabricate this memo. Now, Doug Feith opened up in the Pentagon an alternate stream of intelligence. This, we'd never had done this quite like this before, but basically because the administration didn't completely trust the CIA to be their only channel for intelligence, they set up an intelligence gathering operation within the Pentagon. And this isn't the first time that this group, these neocons, have come up with alternative explanations. There was a thing called Plan B back during the Cold War. And basically, Plan B or option, I think it was Plan B. I may be confusing it with the morning after contraception. But this Plan B was done by a bunch of, I guess I'll call them neocons, and it was involved several people in the administration, like Rumsfeld, like, not Doug Feith, I'm trying to think who all it was. But basically, you go back far enough, and the CIA's analysis of the Cold War was that, you know, we're overestimating the Soviet Union's military strength. They are not the 10-foot Russian soldier. This is not a group of people. This is not a military that is going to dominate us. That we are actually ahead in nuclear weapons. We're ahead. We have superior firepower. We have superior missiles. We have superior fighter jets, aircraft carriers, submarines, all of it. Well, the neocons didn't like that analysis, and maybe the parts of the military industrial complex didn't either, because the more that you need to spend money on this, the more fear there is, the more money you spend on the military. So they came up with an alternate view, and it basically, without being able to document it, basically said the Russian soldier is 10 feet tall, that they're much stronger than we think, they are ahead of us militarily, and we need to catch up. That was the essence of the argument. Well, despite John F. Kennedy claiming there was a missile gap, and despite Ronald Reagan claiming there was a window of vulnerability that the Soviet Union might strike us, despite those raising of fears that were unfounded, when the Soviet Union fell, we learned the truth, that in fact, their military was a shell of what we thought they were. They were nowhere near as powerful as we thought they were. That showed up in Afghanistan in 79 and 80 and 81, and then they ran tail, and they got out of there 8 years later, and it showed up when they finally collapsed. That was a myth promulgated by certain people. Who were those people? People that wanted that myth maintained. Either they were too fearful, and then I don't want them leading the country, or they were deceitful, and they knew it wasn't true, but they had their own reasons for overestimating Soviet military strength. But that went on, and that's been widely discredited, and it's some of the same people. So Doug Feith doesn't like, I'm sorry, the Bush administration doesn't like the fact that the CIA is their only source of intelligence. They don't necessarily trust them. So they set up Doug Feith in the Pentagon to be an alternate source of intelligence. And so the second version of this, the thing that Susskind may have got wrong, is that it was the CIA that produced the memo. It may have been produced in the Pentagon, is the argument. In any case, the interviews that he has with a couple of people way up in the CIA, and they said, look, the original request came from on White House stationery, and of course that could be the vice president's office or the White House. And it doesn't prove that Bush knew, but you can pretty much see Dick Cheney's fingerprints all this through David Addington and Scooter Libby. So now what's interesting is, here's this charge out there. This is a serious impeachable offense if the Bush administration fabricated evidence to get us into a war or to defend their decision to go to war. That's a lot more than just cherry-picking the intelligence, which even that they don't agree. They claim that they were actually that scared that Saddam was a threat to the homeland. I still think they're not fit to lead if they were that scared. You know, you got to have a guy like Obama who isn't that scared. John McCain seems a little scared, too, of the threats that are out there. You really have to weigh these things more maturely than our conservative leaders seem able to do. But regardless of what it is, it's the worst case scenario is Susskind's claim, which is that basically they've committed, impeachable offenses. Now, we're not going to impeach Bush and Cheney at this point, but if we get a Democratic president and then a Democratic Justice Department that is led by a Attorney General appointed by a Democrat, we're much more likely to see some investigation into these kinds of charges. Now, what's interesting, if you look at the media coverage of all this, Fox News today is still covering, people like Glenn Beck are still covering the John Edwards situation, and that has almost zero news value. John Edwards' career is over. He wasn't going to play a prominent part in the Democratic convention. He might have gotten a cabinet post from Obama before this happened, but it's relatively small potatoes, except that it's a sex affair, so there's some juicy details. There's some things that I think Edwards is still withholding, and he hasn't done an interview yet. So I understand why people are interested in this, particularly Fox might be interested in it, because they like the tawdry stuff, and they like stuff about Democrats. But there's no coverage on Fox of the Susskind thing. The only thing I could find on the Fox website, Fox News website, was basically a rebuttal article that says the White House denies that this happened. And I just thought that was pretty interesting. So bottom line is that the information is out there. Susskind has documented it. Although the people that he quoted, two of them have denied it. He then published the transcript and says he's got a recording of their conversation, but these people are under a lot of pressure, so they're backing down from their allegations. This will eventually all come out. But what's interesting is that the investigative arms of radio shows, whether it's Bill O'Reilly or Sean Hannity or anybody else on Fox, normally they want to dig and get to the bottom of things. If it involves a Democrat, they're not even touching this story, even though it's much more important than the kinds of things they normally do investigate. Anyway, for what that's worth, we will leave it at that. And when we come back, we're going to move on to a little bit of election coverage, and that'll take us back to the situation in Russia, in Iraq. We'll have our hands full.